You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
And you are watching Fanboy Versus. I am your host, JD, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely. Those are the people with me this week. Hello, gang.
Hello.
It is Fanboy Versus spoilers as we desperately try to keep fists in our ears as Spider-Man 700 has disseminated its way into certain people's hands. Word has started to trickle out on the internet. Our very own.
I'm okay. I'm clean. My hands are clean.
Yeah. Our very own Chris McFeely
has. You gotta read it. Oh, that's a thing. You gotta read it.
Chris McFeely has already read this book.
And I'm surprised I haven't gotten spoilers yet. Like, I stand on Twitter, and I have not seen a spoiler yet. I probably should stop.
I feel like Doc Brown, you know? And, like, Dan Slott is yelling down, like, I have to tell you about the future! I'm like,
I guess that's the plus of me working at the Nazi compound where we're not allowed to talk to anyone, we're not allowed internet access, and we got to work 12 hours a day. So I guess that's a plus.
So you're kind of on lockdown. Yeah, exactly.
I'm really grateful that I read it as early as I did because I would have been spoiled by now.
Oh, God. Well, yeah, and you're in a real tough spot. I mean, being a retailer. I know Buck, the guy that owns my shop, was saying that he didn't even let the guys that work for him read it. Like, he read it. But he doesn't let anybody else, because he just didn't even want to risk getting pulled from Diamond. So,
I mean, my lip is buttoned. Don't worry, for starters. Listeners, fear not. My lip is buttoned. Not word one of this has been spoken to customer, nor friend, nor nothing.
Yeah, I think your tweet to us was perfect, which was like, I have read 700, that is all.
That's it, so I just wanted to gloat.
Well,
your answer is, I've read 700, and so did you when it comes out. That's your answer, right?
But it is such a tease, because it's like, in some ways, the information is out there, but it's like, no, I want to read it.
yeah, that's it, basically. I mean, it's disappointing, I think, really, that I guess this is our first item of news, really, isn't it? It's disappointing that leaked. Because Marvel have, honest to God, tried to keep this one under their hats.
They've done a better job with this than, like, a lot of other things. Like, we go back to, like, Johnny
say,
Storm.
Like, better job. I mean, they didn't actively take the news story to press themselves and ruin it for everyone on their own a day early.
But in some ways, it's like a fault of the distribution where, you know, the book is already at shops.
That's just necessary. But it was ruined before that.
Yeah.
I mean, put on eBay or something. I mean, there's rumor going around that it was bought by somebody who was moving a stack of them, bought off somebody who was moving a stack of them somewhere adjacent to the Marvel headquarters. I've heard a lot of stuff going around. But that whole issue has been scanned and up and online since before that delivery made it to stores at the start of this week.
I guess I just don't get
it. It's disappointing that people had to.
I just don't get it.
Nah, some people like, it's the firsties. It's all, you know, some people like to be, you know, the ones like, I disseminated this. You got this from me. And like, well, great. I wanted the book in my hand and, you know, to read it at the same time as everybody else, and so. But, you know, like I said, I'm waiting. I just have a few days to go. You know, no one at work is a comic book fan, so I'm okay there. You know, as long as I can avoid tweets and things. You know, Wednesday is the big trick, because I have to make it, like, I have to stay off of Twitter at work all day on Wednesday until I get to the shop after work, and
we'll have to wait and see yet if, I don't suppose really with Christmas happening, there's any chance for the Associated Press to blow this.
Sure they could, but, you know.
There's always a chance.
If they do, it would be Wednesday most likely that would come out. So, but
it's saddening after the Human Torch dying and, I can't think of any other recent examples, but we all know that they've existed. Where it's been blown a day to 2 days before the comic actually comes out.
Yeah, that's true. So
that This time they've honest to God tried, and they did it with 698 as well. They didn't blow 698.
Yeah.
And this happened. And what's even sadder, what's even more depressing than that, is the fact that we know Dancelot has been receiving death threats.
Oh, man. I mean, but he's been receiving those. He's been receiving those for, I mean, weeks now. Before people, when he just announced, like, the storyline, like, the outline, people were already then, like, you know, going nuts. And it's like, what?
I'm like, suffice to say, not saying a word about 700 or anything, but people are already talking about how this is going to have to be retconned or whatever. Oh, and when sales tank, they'll change it back. And I'm like, are you so monumentally stupid as to believe that this is anything more than a medium term at most storyline that Slott has not already got a planned ending for?
Yeah. I mean,
talking about how ruins Spider-Man and how it'll be a low point in the character and everything, and how disrespectful it is of a fictional character.
Oh God!
I contemplated unfollowing him because it was making me sad. The fact that through his Twitter, I was becoming aware of how stupid such a large number of people are.
But in some ways, and I get that, and I think I felt that way too. But I think in some ways it's kind of important to see that, and so to just to know that it's like, this is how passionate some people are, you know, like to a point of insanity, really.
I can't call that a passion. I can't.
Well, I'm saying they're passionate.
I know what you mean. Whenever I hear that somebody is passionate about something, I always take it in a positive context, and I can't.
Wouldn't that be great?
No, right. I love this, like, the fan base is so passionate, is what every creator who ever got shit flung at them on the internet said.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's, yeah, it's almost become a negative thing, like, to be, it's like, you're so passionate that you're willing to kill people that don't, like, respect the story that you envision. Like, okay.
But passionate fans actually form the heart of the other big story this week.
Yeah!
Yeah, so, which is that DC went back on their decision, and Gail Simone is not leaving Batgirl.
Oh, you know, wow. I have to say, like, when I read the story, I didn't get to fully tweet my idea, so I'll kind of, you know, say it here, which is that I'm really excited for Gail, sort of. I mean, I'm excited for her, like, to be back, you know, on a book, because I know that she really enjoyed it. There had been some discussion, I discussed with a few people after, you know, about what her run was like, and, you know, we had, I think, had talked about how the fact we're not reading it, and so. So I'm a little, I think it's shocking from a standpoint of what the hell is going on at DC.
Yeah.
Because,
well, that's, I mean, I've seen that happen at Marvel. I mean, Triplett, you'll remember when it was announced that Mark Waid was leaving, Waid and Ringo were leaving Fantastic Four, and the other one, what? And then it was like, no,
there's a disagreement, right? Like, Marvel wasn't happy with what Mark Waid was doing with Fantastic Four, I think is what the case, right? Something like that. And he was, getting rid of him, and then there was, like, this huge outcry, and it's just, they put it back on because, like, people love that run. That's one of the best Fantastic Four runs that I can think of.
Yeah, well, it's tough. But with Batgirl, I think it is a little bit more for DC, a little bit more saving face after the really disgraceful way that she was let go from the book.
Yeah.
I'm kind of, like, in a place where, like, I was going to probably drop the book when she got off of it. I'm kind of only buying the book because she's writing the book. As far as I can think, it's like the only monthly title she's doing. I mean, is she doing anything else that I'm missing?
I kind of want to support her.
You know, it's not my favorite comic, but, you know, I enjoy it, like, on certain levels.
She did
My reaction was a very selfish one where I was like, well, good for her. But I kind of wanted her to write something else I might give a shit about.
Well, now,
I was wondering
if you say that, but she did.
I really did. I wanted to see something else.
She did say a few days earlier that she was going to be writing a female team book. So, I don't know if this is going to supersede that or this changes that. There hasn't been much mention of it. But I don't wonder. I mean, did they not just get a new writer for Birds of Prey, or what's Birds of Prey situation right now? I mean, that would be the only female book I could think
Birds
of.
Birds of Prey situation is that I am aware it exists.
Right, and I so that's kind of what I'm saying. It's like, maybe I'm imagining the situation where they're like, please, Gail, don't go anywhere. We'll give you Batgirl back, and you can have Birds of Prey as well.
And to be fair, her last run-through at Birds of Prey was nothing special. We all read that, and we weren't particularly well.
Right.
I
and,
figured
well,
she was talking about Fearless Defenders over at Marvel or something like
that's
that.
That's what I was hoping for. And I mean, she is non-exclusive, I guess, so that's certainly
she's
a possibility.
She's non-exclusive, no, still, so that's there's that.
But I have to say that I was not... don't get me wrong. Gail has written some really good stuff. I mean, obviously, like I said, I love some of her stuff, but... I can't say that it was all, like you say, like, you know, for you as well, like I said, that it was all like a positive response. I think it was more in awe of the calamity at DC.
Yeah.
And, you know, just strange. It just seems very strange. It just, wow. Really yeah. odd. Really odd. Especially since there really wasn't an official announcement from DC. Like, she said it, and the news has hit. But it's not like DC was like, hey, kids, you said you wanted it. She's back. You know? It just seems kind of very...
Oh, I know I'm happy, because I don't have to drop it now.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think the positive thing, at least now, it seems like she'll have more time to kind of finish it out.
She's kind of bulletproof now, though, is yeah. one of those things.
That's like, and that's what
when they came back, she's like, "Oh, what are you gonna do? What are you gonna do? Let me do again?" And like the first time, she's kind of got that. She might have a bit more clip. Maybe she can tell actually how Batgirl got the use of her legs back now.
Yeah, now she's gonna like be able to do just like the most controversial stories. You know, she's gonna like put her back in the wheelchair or something. You saw
well,
like
but
that,
I'm
that you know.
But
it's like, yeah, what are you gonna do about it, DC?
But here's another angle to this. You know, you just brought in a new Bat editor. You know, that's taking over some of these Bat books, which I think is a good, you know, I mean, that's fine. But the dude comes in and wants to, you know, fix some things up. And like we said, Batgirl has been fine, but it's not one of the more stellar Batman titles. And,
but the world seems to love it.
Well, okay. But, you know, not everybody feels that way. And I think if you really look at it, you know, I think, and maybe that's concern because, like I said, some other people have voiced this idea that Gail's stuff is popular no matter what. It's like, oh, if Gail writes it, I'll read it. And it's like, man, is that true? Is that really good business?
Well, she has a built-in fan base.
Correct.
But,
and that's
yeah,
what
that
I'm saying.
Doesn't necessarily
like,
translate to sales. You look at something that she did like Welcome to Tranquility, mm-hmm. which got tanked after 6 issues and then managed one more miniseries after that. You know?
Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah. I think it's interesting. It's painted DC into a bit of a corner. Both
they really don't have anywhere to go. No.
Yeah. So interesting. So what else? What else do we have?
The only other thing I can think of is that we did get confirmation that, to the surprise of nobody, Hugh Jackman will indeed be in X-Men: Days of Future Past.
I hope to see him charged to death by a Sentinel.
As do I.
Yeah.
Not because I hate it.
Okay. Where is that? Where's that at, by the way? I mean, in terms of production. Are they filming or?
I think they gotta wait until the next Hunger Games is done because the lead actress of it is Mystique.
Is she? Oh well, there you go.
Oh well, yeah.
Know that.
Yeah. She was I think the movie was supposed to already be like in production at this point in filming. And they want to go ahead with the next movie of the Hunger Games series, and I was like, hey, do you want to just you know postpone that and come and be an X-Men, or do you just want those millions of dollars for Hunger Games? I think I'll take the money.
I'll take you know? The millions of dollars.
Take Hunger Games for $500 million.
So they're like, yeah, we'll wait, and we'll just like you know, announce in our trailer that, hey, we got What's Your Name from the Hunger Games in X-Men, you know.
Yeah, it'll be something they can sell it like that, no.
Yeah, it'll be something like that.
Lovely.
Hey, I'm fine. As long as it's a good movie, I can wait, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So. Well, yeah, that's, yeah, that could happen. Yeah. We'll see. All right, cool. So that's all of our news then.
That's all I can think of, unless anyone else has anything. I'm
trying to remember because we missed a whole week, and it seemed like there was.
I can't remember anything from last week.
Yeah.
Oh well, I mean, it's not comic related in the slightest, but CW has options for pilot a Robin Hood show called Sherwood.
Okay, now they really screwed up with the naming of this show because, okay, they got a show called Arrow.
Right.
They should have named this show Bo, and then they should have said, like, Wednesday night, see Bo and Arrow.
Oh, my God. Bo and Arrow.
Or like a pair of Maverick cops.
Oh,
together
man.
To fight crime.
Now, this Sherwood show, it's not our idea, right? It's not the modern
No, way. It's period.
There.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's so period.
We got
says.
The name and we got the station right.
Yeah. So, that's pretty close, you know?
This sentence. Tuesdays at 8, 7 Central, only on the CW. Sherwood will
I don't
be
know,
spoken.
I don't know if it should be flattering or we should be scared if someone's listening to our ideas.
That is our eye for 2014.
Yeah. Wow. So.
You know, when I saw your tweet and I saw you linking to something, you know, we got it right or most of the way or something, I was like, dear God, they make Themyscira high? Jesus Christ.
Could happen.
Is that what they're doing?
You know, I was talking about Themyscira high as a spinoff of this conversation and with a friend of mine, and it started to grow again.
Uh oh.
Yeah, you know, we're imagining like. Well, we've already sufficiently acknowledged that this is a Buffy knockoff. You know, Diana's Buffy, Etta Kat is Willow,
right?
And,
yeah,
and there's Trevor. You know, and then right around the third season, well, that's when Headmistress Cersei makes the evil clone of Diana to insert into the school as a student to destroy her. You know, and that's Donna Troy. That's where Donna Troy comes from. You know, and then you can get like. Additional Amazon, like there's a strange new student, maybe second season territory. New student attends the school, you know, a bit of a mysterious backstory. Where does she come from? Turns out she's another Amazon who's been sent by Hippolyta to just keep an eye on Diana. And she's really good at track and field and archery and stuff. And that's Artemis. That's how Artemis gets into the show. This shit writes itself.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh my God. So I did think of one other bit of news that we didn't mention, which is that hopefully you weren't betting on the Dark Horse because they are going to be steadily losing their Star Wars property. So
who would have guessed?
I mean, that's
that?
Not a big surprise, but I mean, we kind of got the confirmation of it.
I'm not sure. I didn't
week.
See confirmation. I just saw that was talk going around.
I thought I saw
the industry outside, not idle speculation,
yeah.
But like talk from secret inside sources. He tell me inside.
No,
the
I thought it was but, more so like, than that. But
that's just confirmation of what we all knew was inevitably going to happen.
Yep.
One would just have to hope Marvel will treat the Star Wars well. I don't know, toss, but one would hope Star Wars fans would have to hope that Marvel will treat the properties better than the properties that they got from Boom.
Now, the Dark Horse comics are actually supposed to be pretty good, right? I've never actually read them, but they got
good ones and bad ones.
Yeah.
I mean, for goodness sakes, a Star Wars ongoing series is about to launch next month with Brian Wood as the writer. Like, that is almost interesting enough for me to want to check that out.
Wow. Yeah.
Cool.
Oh, yeah. So, anyway, that's...
Yeah, I kind of hate that for Dark Horse, because, like, I mean,
it was really kind of paying the bills.
Yeah, I mean, because, like, for years, like, the things I thought of when I thought of Dark Horse, I thought of, like, Star Wars. I thought of, I think they had Predator and Alien.
Yeah, Aliens and Predator were their big things as well.
And then, like, beyond that, it's, like, for years, it's been, like, Buffy. And that's it. I can't think of anything else. I was trying to think of something else Dark Horse put out, and I could not. It was pretty bad.
Hellboy? Yeah.
Hellboy. I forgot about Hellboy. Okay.
So, yeah. And, yeah, so basically, though... Yeah. But I think Star Wars has been sort of keeping the lights on over there. You know, it's been kind of the thing that they could depend on. So it'll be interesting to see, you know. But sometimes...
It's a give-and-take relationship, because, I mean, Star Wars probably kept Dark Horse alive, particularly in the 90s. But then at the same time, Dark Horse also kept Star Wars alive in comic form in those periods in between, basically, in between Jedi and Phantom Menace, really.
Yeah. So the but, you know, in the end, it's going to be so long, and thanks for all the fish, as Star Wars sets out. But,
well,
you know,
one would hope that it comes in such a way that they can really have a really big blowout for it instead of the quiet fizzle and die that happened with the Disney stuff. Unpublished
Muffs and a terrible... They need to end it by writing a comic, write a comic called Revenge of the Jedi. Just do whatever you want in that comic. Call it Revenge of the Jedi. I'd be happy with it. I'd probably buy that if they did that. Just end it. Just Revenge of the Jedi.
But it may be a blessing, I mean, in a sense, because it may, you know, force them to really, you know, innovate and do some popular things or do some things that may be a little bit more attention-grabbing than
well,
what they've done.
Well, Dark Horse are kind of making some strides like that in... They're kind of following Image's maneuvers lately. You know, they've launched a couple of interesting new things. Brian Woods launched The Massive over at Dark Horse. We've had, I think, Greater Pacific, I think. And that's just launched over at Dark Horse as well. That's an interesting one. And they've launched these new line of horror books as well, with some really horrific imagery on the covers, you know. And I think all in all, they probably realize that. And they like Image. They really have to, especially given the recent lawsuits and things that have happened with Marvel, well, not so much DC, but mostly Marvel, about creators' rights and everything. Yeah. They really have to position themselves to be as appealing or more than appealing as Image to get the creators to come and bring their original ideas to them and you know, repurpose themselves to do that instead of just doing licensed books. I mean, to be fair, like for years and years, Dark Horse was the licensed book guys, and that's IDW now. IDW are a company that are recognized for being predominantly made up of, like, 90% made up of licensed materials.
Right.
So Dark Horse, they're already making these steps towards being not just that, but to being, I mean, their licenses, probably, I mean, the licenses that they have are bigger than pretty much all of IDW's licenses put together. Turtles, G.I. Joe, Ghostbusters, Transformers. Yeah, they've got Star Trek. I'm sorry, they've got Star Wars. Star Wars. But no, they don't. So they have to position themselves to be something else. And I think they're already making steps towards that. Frankly, I mean, I think they knew the writing was on the wall as soon as they got wind of any of this.
Yeah, which they probably would have, you know. So.
Yeah, so I think they'll... it'll probably be a rough period, but I think I have a good feeling about it. I think they'll come out of it stronger.
Yeah, so cool. All right, well then, if that is news, we will move on to recommendations. We are going to try to actually do recommendations instead of reviews.
I wish we could just get an actual French guy to just kind of like announce the recommendations like you just said.
Recommendations.
Like a real guy doing, like a sound clip. Yeah, like a sound clip of just some dude from like some movie. Recommendations.
It's only wafer thin.
Wafer thin mint.
Monsieur Friosot.
Wow! Yes.
Who needs someone professional? We've got McFeely. He does.
Yeah,
all
I mean, really. Yeah. When you've got Chris McFeely, you don't need
professionals. If you have a McFeely,
why pay for the milk when you've already got a cow?
There you go. All right, Chris Triplett, your timer is beginning. Well, after I tell this call, I'm not taking it. Okay, and go.
So I'm just going to do two quick little recommendations of Captain America number 2 came out. Hey, this book continues to be awesome. And I just, the one thing about this book that really kind of threw me is that I opened it and then the first page is just a black page. It just says 1 year later.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. I didn't get a chance to read this issue, but I forgot that was the first page of it. And I was like,
So I have to interject a joke here. I was at my shop, and I saw the cover of that issue. And I turned to Buck, and I go, hey, why is Thor on the cover of Captain America?
That's a good question.
Just
I would say one of the strangest things I've ever seen is Captain America with a beard, because I don't know if I've ever seen that with the mask on, you know, and a beard. I kind of like it. I kind of want to see Cap keep a beard for a while. Even I know he won't. But
he's become a big boy.
It's all grown up.
What I like about this book, you know, just to kind of condense it down into just a little bit.
Wait,
of,
was just he just was he just participating in Movember? I mean, that was just last month.
No. Well, I guess you could say that. I mean, whenever this book was written, it's possible. But it's a whole beard, though. It's not just a mustache. But what I like about this book in this direction is it's kind of like, you know, it's like a soldier in not safe territory. It's like a soldier in this land that he's just not familiar with. In this case, it's like this alien world. It's not like, you know, him fighting in, you know, like a Vietnam or an Afghanistan. It's like in a whole other dimension. And I think that's just really cool. Just taking the soldier, the man out of time, out of, and yet even more out of his element and putting him into this other thing. And it's just cool. It's just a great idea for a book. I don't know how much exit this book has, but I'm sticking around. And dude, John Romita Jr., his art. Oh my gosh. He's got some crazy stuff going on in the book. You guys should probably check it out. If you care anything about Captain America, I think you'll enjoy it.
I meant to check it out, but I sold it all before I got a chance to, and all I got to see was that first page, and I did have that damn realization.
And what an ending. I'm not going to say what happens at the ending, but oh god, you're just like, you want to know what's going to happen next. It's, he gets caught in this situation where I don't even want to say it. It's just one of those last page comics. It's like, oh crap, did what happened just happen? Oh god, you know. But and then just moving on real quick, Daredevil continues to be excellent. What's so great about this issue is you kind of see the depths of like how horrible it could be if somebody had the powers of the Spot. Let's say you have the powers of the Spot and you're not just doing goofy stuff like robbing a bank. Let's talk about torturing people. Like not just physically but mentally. Oh my god, it's great. Did you read McFeely? Did you check out this issue?
Yep.
So that sounds like, what if someone who wasn't a dork, the Spot, yeah, was the Spot.
Like, whenever you think of the Spot, you think of like, you know, kind of crazy 60s-ish, you know, Marvel villain. I mean, I don't know when he first appeared, but he just seems like a 60s-ish type of an idea of a villain. And then it's like Mark Waid's like, you know what? You could do some really messed up stuff with those powers. And he does in this issue. I mean, it's not the Spot doing it, but it's like his powers being used to like do horrible, horrible things.
Hmm.
So that was something I actually didn't get the chance to point out. It was a couple of issues back. I was saying that when I reviewed, I don't remember what issue number it was, but I talked about how Mark Waid had made the Spot cool and sinister. Well, it turned out it's not the Spot. It's just somebody biting at stuff.
No, I mean, like at first he thought it was him.
He was supposed to think it was to start with, but then you find the Spot all strung up in this hideous apparatus to give this other character, the Coyote, the Spot's powers.
And I love how the issue ends too, because like we've throughout the whole series we've been talking about how, you know, Matt's like, I want to be the happy guy now. I don't want to be the dark and, you know, the brooding hero. I don't want to be the guy that's got all these problems on my shoulders. And then like it's kind of like they've gone back to the dark stuff, you know, because the stuff with his estranged wife, you know, and how he's sort of dealing with it and everything. It's just like it's kind of telling you that it's still there. But as a reader, you can kind of, you know, can move on with the story without it being that much of a detriment to it. And it crosses over with Amazing Spider-Man number 300.
700.
I'm 700. I'm a crap. I don't know why.
No spider armor in this one.
No spider armor in this one. Or Venom. I think that was first appearance of Venom, actually.
Sorry, yes, that was 400 was the spider armor.
Yeah, like, at the end of the issue, Spidey shows up, but I don't know which Spider-Man this is, and the way he's talking.
It is supposed to be Superior, but
yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was thinking whoever it is, it's this new guy, and I don't know who it is. And it's a cool end of the issue, and I am still loving that book.
The end of the issue is a great double punch, because I'd already figured out it was going to be. There's no spoiler or anything, because it's been everywhere. And I was like, I already figured that Kirsten was talking to Spider-Man, and I was like, oh, I'm turning the page and it's going to be Spider-Man. But then you're like, he says his line, and you're like, "Oh wait, no, it's not." But then, so you're like, you get this quick punch of realization that it's not really what you thought it was. But then it's like her reaction to his line as well, just to, gives you a laugh at the end of the issue as well. It's really well executed.
I got no idea what's going to happen next. This book is so great. God, Mark Waid never quit writing Daredevil. Please don't ever stop writing this book.
I'm really loving this.
And I'm done.
Buggy and Matt's relationship as well.
Yeah, it's so good. I could literally spend the whole show just talking about this one comic, and I know I don't have the time, but you should just buy it and read it. Just buy it and read it. It's good.
Cool.
I dropped Daredevil because I needed to drop something. My wallet was
Yeah, I think I'm going to do the trades on it. So.
Wrong choice. So. Missing out. One of the best comics in Marvel. No, one of the best comics out there is what you're missing out on. I would go like Amazing Spidey, Daredevil, Saga. I lump all those together.
More than
Meets the Eye is in there. Oh my God, can you imagine More Than Meets the Eye, a Transformers comic?
I know.
I know.
That's insane.
And yet, there it is.
There it is.
So awesome. Yeah. Okay. Good deal. Very good. See, that was even better already. You're doing good. You know a clock's ticking and you're set to go. All right.
I'm just set a good example.
And Nicole, your time begins now.
Well, we were talking about More Than Meets the Eye. I want to recommend it, but I can't talk about it because our fans in the UK have not got this week.
It's very good, so I'm glad that you're recommending it. Somebody should.
First of all, I was not able to see all the variants of the covers until I was on Skype with Amy, and I opened up my comic book, and I had the biggest fangirlgasm anyone could ever have, as the retail incentive cover is a mock-up of Transformers as the Beatles doing Sergeant Pepper album. I'm like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. So you guys, go out and buy your retail instead of a cover, because I would love to have this in poster size, first of all.
I was going to ask, were you able
it's
to
like
get
it? It's like the coolest thing. I'm pretty sure, because my comic book guy gets at least one of each retail incentive, and I'm pretty sure I could get it from him. He has the ins. So. I will get this. Trust me.
Yeah,
and I will hang it on my wall.
It's like, if you don't get it, that would just be wrong.
Yeah.
I don't. Mm-hmm. So if we had in our best of show, best cover of the year, Casey Collar, you won my heart, man. Biggest fangirl right here of yours. But again, this comic just blows me away. Yeah, like you said, who thought Transformers would be like in your top five? The jury, you know. I don't want to say a whole lot, but you do see one of the things that's in it is the background story of Chrome Dome and Rewind, which is awesome. That's one of the things you get to see. Mm-hmm. Again, a lot of emotions in it. You know, like I said, I can't really say a whole lot, but it's just awesome.
I want to tell like one thing about it, but I can't. I mean, because I don't want to spoil it because it's just really, really, really cool.
Yeah.
But,
I know.
It's
I mean, people, just go pick it up. It's a good read.
When is this going to be out? Is it going to be out next week? We might have to talk about
it. No, that's the problem. I mentioned this on Twitter earlier, but it's not included on the invoice for the stock that's shipping for sale on the 2nd of January either. But the next Rage of the Dinobots is, so where's More Than Meets the Eye number 12? I don't know. I have read it personally, so you're not holding it back for my sake. You're holding it back for the British.
Like
I mean,
said,
like,
a couple
this could be a contender for best issue of the year. I mean, it's really good.
Yeah,
it's another example of the not just More Than Meets the Eye, but just like where IDW is right now, the willingness to do experimental storytelling. It's not just a licensed toy book that goes A to B. It's like the time travel issue of Robots in Disguise from 2 months ago. It's like Shadow Play, where we've got the multiple narrators overlapping with one another. Mm-hmm. Narrative experiments that we've just never, ever seen the like of in even in the cartoons for this franchise. It's comic first, licensed property second.
Well, see, another good thing about this issue is they used two different artists on it, because they have a before and after story. So they have Alex Milne on the before, and then they have Brendan Cahill on the afters. It makes it just that much better. I don't know. I want to talk more about this. You guys just need to go out and read it.
I just want to say one thing. I'm not going to say anything about the story, but just about the art. I love it that they can take a robot who has no mouth and no eyes and just a visor and make him look so sad.
I know.
That's a good artist to do that, to take someone with no mouth and no eyes and to make them look sad. You know?
I mean, look at Whirl. You know the expressions on Whirl. You're just like, these guys.
I mean, More Than Meets the Eye does lean to a cartoonish style. I don't mean that in a detrimental way. I just mean that they're doing, like, it's cartooning.
It's exaggerated, yeah.
They really are exaggerating the things. And this look would not necessarily, it wouldn't necessarily work on any comic, but it works very well with the emotional depths that James Roberts' scripts go to. And but then you look at the More Than Meets the Eye annual, for instance, and you see how something just felt a little bit off. And it was the same with the Orion Pax spotlight we got this month as well. There's just some kind of disconnect between the art and the script that just didn't quite seem to work. It does need, Roberts' scripts really need to seem to have that slight cartoonish edge to them to really sell what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, you can't really have a robot with no eyes and no mouth expressing emotions without squashing and stretching the features of their notionally solid metal head. But that's what the script calls for, and it works because the story sells the character to you, and the art reflects the character, and you're just willing to set aside that disconnect between what you know the reality of the fictional world ought to be, but with what it actually is. And it, like, this is an issue. This is probably like the issue where the emotions run the highest as well. I mean,
oh, for sure. Like, I have my favorite characters. I can't say who right now. If you guys have listened to the show, you know who they are. But to find out that I can even like these people even more or have more emotion for them, that's good writing. Because these guys are already my favorites. And then to actually have more emotion for them is even... Yeah, so James Roberts, awesome.
Yeah.
I think we should get tattoos that say bomb disposal on our arms now.
Yes.
Wait to finally see him in his element. For this wonderful moment, he wasn't the naive little wallflower who's confused by the world.
Suddenly,
he had something in front of him that he totally understood and got stuck in with somebody completely different and somebody you were really like, yeah, get in there.
That's a teaser for the comic, by the way. That's a teaser. What that is.
Of course, we can't let it pass without just commenting that it's immensely daring as well for something in Transformers.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, we've had the hints. I didn't actually buy into the idea that there was a relationship between Rewind and Chrome Dome at the start of the comic. Mm-hmm. I didn't see it. I just saw two friends. Shippers will ship, and that became a popular thing. And then the more the comic went on, the more I started to see what they were getting at.
Yeah.
And then basically hit Shadow Play, where we got the whole thing with Rewind and Chrome Dome and Prowl. And then I was like, yeah, okay, this is actually part of this, isn't it? There's no argument here. And then we get this issue, which is, and obviously, like, obviously people are going to say one thing and the other, and it's like, these are asexual beings who don't experience romance the same way that we do. And whatever, but, you know, long story short, male pronouns, gay Transformers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't pick that up. But the thing is, there was more character development in this one issue than probably the first 2 years of Transformers. It's kind of sad to say.
You mean of, like, the show? Or... Because I would up that to, like, the first 20 years of...
Yes. God, yes.
Like I said, I already have my favorite issue of the year, but this could easily come in a close second.
Yeah.
So,
it was a nice surprise. It really was.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the season ender. It's the first year ender for More Than Meets the Eye. And it's great that it doesn't go for the bombastic ending. It's quite a surprise. Like, given that it starts out with the Autobots all in a shuttle off to go to war, you know, and you think it's going to be a big blowout, action-packed season finale, the fact that it actually turns out to be a very character-based, emotional, intimate thing is...
Yeah, it's like...
It's a credit to the book and the series in general.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you guys, I know we're like being pretty vague on it, but it's that good.
This is the sort of thing we need to do every week. This is the kind of thing.
Right. We need to be a little vague.
The next one I want to talk about is the new number one. It's called It's Castle, based on the TV show, which is about a writer who writes about a detective that he's following around. Well, in this one, it's kind of like a little spin-off. It's Richard Castle's other book that he's writing on, and it's starring Derek Storm. And apparently it's based off of a true story of an individual that he knew that he's – but it's a guy this time. So instead of Nicky Heat, it's based off of a guy and his development. So if you're into the Richard Castle TV show, this is definitely up your alley because – they also have like little Nathan Fillion inserts into it. Like he used to be on a sci-fi drama that didn't go over well. Like little hints that Nathan Fillion is also having a little part into this comic book. So it is a crime drama. The main star buys a new yacht because he sold his rights to his product, and he wakes up with a head floating next to his yacht. So that's,
I hate it when that happens.
Yeah, and it has a swastika carved into his face, and so that's the drama comes in. And of course, they bring in the FBI agent. He knows the FBI lady; he's dealt with her before, and so you see this little twist going on. So there's a little, little love bitterness between them two and his father. So that, and they're all coming together to figure out whose head this is. And they did find out it was some Russian guy that's had it for him for a while. So if you're a fan of the show, you're going to like it. So if you like those murder mysteries.
Sweet.
Which I do.
Murder mysteries.
So yeah. I would talk more about it, but we talked a lot about Transformers. go. Yeah, if you like Castle, you'll like it.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people do, so yeah, I mean, sounds interesting.
Like I said, like the little Nathan Fillion jabs is awesome. So, you gotta love it.
Sweet. Okay. And
that's it for me.
Excellent. All right. We're doing so good. You're doing so good, team.
Yay, team!
So, I haven't closed it up
yet.
Go,
team, go!
So, and then we wait till we get to Chris McFeely. So, okay, so I'm going to talk about something I hadn't mentioned a little while. We've said it, but I haven't actually, given a full recommendation of it, which is Hawkeye. Hawkeye's...
Hawkeye.
Well, I'm about to tell you about that, because there's a funny bit in this book that I will relay. So this is Hawkeye 6. I saw a tweet from David Asia on Twitter a couple days ago, and he said that he's pretty sure he broke every rule of comic book art in this book, and I would agree, and he does it awesomely. So many boxes, so much white space, and yet still a ton of story told just through the visuals in this book. I mean, if nothing else, I mean, it's one of the great things about this book is the art. It's so off and wild.
Well, the thing is, if reading the series, it fits.
Exactly, and that's the thing, is it fits perfectly with the series. I mean, the color and everything is just great. The muted colors and everything. So, this is an issue that, it's one of those where it's like a payoff issue. If you've read a lot of the previous issues, this one really pays off. If you haven't, it's still a great story. So it's definitely worth picking up. But it's 6 days in the life of Hawkeye. But not in order.
Six. Nah.
But not in order.
Oh, right.
So it's a little out of order, but it makes it more fun and interesting because you can sort of tell where you're at based on how many bandages he has on his face. But there's a lot of returning characters. The Russians from that one issue. The bro guys that we talked about a while back. That mob is back, and a lot of other sub-characters. But we mentioned that, of course, all the production team for this keep calling him Hawk Guy, which is hilarious. But there's a sequence I'm going to actually go through that's on the roof. This is December the 14th.
That's my birthday!
So so he's talking to this guy, which looks like a very tall Michael Moore. And he's giving him a DVR that has all the episodes of Dog Cops. I don't think this is a real show. But everybody's talking about how great it is. And he tries to watch it for like the entire issue. But he's giving it to him. He's like, enjoy it, Hawk Guy. You deserve it. Joyous Kwanzaa. He's like, Hawk Guy? He's like, you don't gotta pretend you ain't Hawk Guy around us, Hawk Guy. Yeah, right. No, I'm not. But Hawk Eye or Hawk Guy? You're Hawk Guy. Hawk Eye. Yeah. I. You're Hawk Guy.
You're Hawk Guy.
Hawk Guy. Just like on MASH. Right. Hawk Guy.
I freaking need to buy the trans of this series. I don't know why I'm not buying it.
It's a good series. When I'm
hearing about hearing how good it is that I am not buying it and asking myself why I'm not, I really don't know why I'm not buying this book.
I don't know.
I gotta admit, this is probably one of the biggest surprises of the year.
I mean, this is just such a damn good book. And there's a ton of great moments. I mean, in a sense, like, that's sort of what the book is just like a lot of real great moments. And where he's not with the Avengers, he's doing his own thing. So if you like the idea of like the character of Hawkeye for those little quips, yeah, Hawkeye, for like the quips and stuff that he gets in, if you like those and you want a whole book of that, but with story as well, that's what this is. And that's what makes this great. I mean, there's a fight sequence in the beginning of it where they're like fighting AIM. It's Spider-Man, Wolverine, and Hawkeye, and like, you know, he of course makes one of his typical jokes. He's like, I think my concussions have concussions, you know. And AIM is
like, Marvel stumbled a little.
Say again.
I was going to say Marvel stumbled a little bit out of the gate in following up the Avengers movie hype, but really? Like, just after that opening stumble with the first meh arc of Avengers Assemble, they are writing this shit now. Mm-hmm. We've got Hawkeye, yeah, the best comic he's ever had ever. Mm-hmm. We've got Kelly Sue DeConnick, who's transformed Avengers into Assemble into something that is just the complete comedic, witty, tonal match for the film. We've got Hickman tearing it up with the cosmic concepts over on the new Avengers series. Like we said it last time when we talked about Avengers number one, but it is a really good year for the Avengers. It's a good last quarter of the year for Avengers. It's sort of, we sort of got to stumble over that middle quarter, that the fall period after the film in the summer, but once we hit winter, holy crap, is Avengers kicking ass as a franchise right now.
Yep.
You know, this was probably one of the biggest surprises of the year right here.
Oh, God. How much did we talk badly about this book before it came out? You know, we're like...
I'm completely justified in all that crap we took.
Another Hawkeye book by Matt Fraction, the guy that brought you freaking Fear Itself.
Another Hawkeye book? Did he write a Hawkeye book prior to this?
Well, no, not saying he did, but it's like they've... it's like we talk about how many attempts they've made, you know. Yeah. Amon, this kills me, because as they're being in shackles and walking off, they're like, we are the 99%! We are the 99%! No, you aren't! Shut up! So.
Now, Fraction did not have a good start to the year with Fear Itself and really unremarkable Thor and a Defender series that just didn't take off. But what he's doing now, Hawkeye, Fantastic Four, FF... This is where like all that crap was holding back. You know, had to get through that to get up to this.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think it's a good standalone issue. If you just pick up six, like it's fine. But it will pay off a bunch if you pick up, you know, the few issues before. I mean, you only got five issues previous. But like I said, I love this like gang that he's pissed off, and because they all wear like the track suits. And they call each other bro. It's like,
bro,
he's here, bro. Yeah, bro, we're going to get him, bro. Yeah. Oh, my God. And their leader, like, wears the... He wears the glasses with the slats. Has an oxygen machine.
They almost look like they have the same shirt that McFeely has on right now.
Yeah.
What are you saying, McFeely, huh?
But anyway, yes. Yeah, so check it out. Hawkeye.
Yeah, so I'll say this. The first trade of Hawkeye is out in February. Month and a half away. I will be getting this.
Sweet.
Other people should too.
Yes, absolutely. All right, very good. All right, we've come time for Chris McFeely.
Okay.
Your time starts now.
Okay, well, I missed out getting a chance to talk about the first issue last week, and because of Marvel's kind of crunched down, kind of crazy holiday shipping, the second issue was out this week, so I'm just going to talk about the first two in general, of the controversial, much maligned, I don't know if maligned is the right, much maligned in advanced Avengers Arena.
Is it controversial? Why is it controversial?
Well, we'll talk about it.
Chris.
Okay.
How would you feel if a lot of Marvel's newest, best new characters were all herded off to an island in an insanely derivative premise derived from a popular film that in turn was very similar to a classic Japanese franchise?
Now I wouldn't say that's controversial. I would say that's kind of stupid is what I would say. But this book's good. Tell me this book's good.
Well, the premise is exactly as I have described it. It is utterly unapologetic in that regard, and there is no getting around it. So the book does at least actively address it when, I don't know if we've actually mentioned this on the show before, but the villain is Arcade. Marvel does have a villain whose business it is to take you off to an island and kill you, so they got that going for them.
Is the island Murder World?
Yep.
It is Murder World.
He's taking off.
Yeah. But this, and, you know, the central hook for Arcade is solid as well. It's the fact that, as pretty much anybody who knows Arcade knows, despite the fact that he's supposed to be like a really highly paid murder contractor, his death trap to kill ratio is embarrassingly low, as all that ever happens in comics is that superheroes get out of Murder World.
Right.
So the idea here is that he is, he's not doing this for anybody else, so he claims anyway. He is here to get his rep up again. It's kind of an Arcade on the edge, a sinister, creepy Arcade who has kidnapped these young, slightly less skilled, slightly more vulnerable superhumans to kill them and get his rep back as somebody who can actually successfully kill folks.
Hmm.
He gets 16 superhumans. And I'll just quickly go through who we've got here. We have got X-23, Reptile, Justin Seyfert and his Sentinel, Hazmat and Metal from Avengers Academy. We have got Nico and Chase from Runaways. We've got a character named Cammy, who I believe was in Annihilation. It was in Annihilation Conquest, perhaps. I don't know her. We have Darkhawk. And then we have characters, I believe they're all new characters, I don't know because I don't know them, who attend the Braddock Academy. I've never heard of that either. Obviously, it's essentially the British Avengers Academy, the British school for super people. Kid Britain, Apex, Anachronism, Bloodstone, and Nara. And then also a character named Red Raven is in this, and I don't know her either, and it doesn't matter as of issue 2.
Okay.
Well,
yeah. So it's about as grisly and miserable as you would expect. And to save this book, most of the first issue is simply introducing the premise. Arcade even says he got the idea from some kids' books he read while he was in prison. So they address the fact that it is shamelessly ripped off of something else, and they move on. Arcade is displaying an awfully high level of power, which kind of calls the whole thing into question. It's all slightly unreal, shall we say. The first issue is not... Look, okay, so no spoilers or anything, right? But I don't know if we were promised a death in every issue of this series, but we're 2 for 2 right now, anyway. And I'm not identifying who's going to die or anything, but suffice it to say, I was extraordinarily pissed off by the end of the first issue.
I think we can say it. We should say it. It's been a week now, or
no,
2 weeks.
I don't want to say it. I'm just going to leave it.
I want to say it. I want to talk about this.
I'm not going to read it. I don't care.
I know, but just for the sake of the just for the listeners at home, I'm not going to address it. Suffice it to say, it was a character I really liked, who I figured was probably safe because he was one of the most visible of Marvel's young heroes in the last year or two, and you probably can figure out who it is based on young heroes who I've said I've enjoyed in the last year or two. So we'll just leave it at that. It left me quite pissed off as the first issue. I wasn't entirely ready to write the comic off after the first issue because it's still a popular theory among fans that we could be looking at some kind of VR simulation here because Arcade is displaying some very unusual, reality manipulation powers, essentially. He is manipulating the matter of murder world around him here, so we don't know. There could be something more to it. And it's got dark, hard-edged... Sorry?
I was saying, what's the point if you, like, you up front say, oh, it's going to be this, and then it turns out, oh, it's actually a dream.
This is it. It's a lose-lose scenario, really.
Yeah.
So we just have to see how it plays out. But it does have some very nice, grim, hard-edged art from Kev Walker. It's written by Dennis Hopeless, whose work we enjoyed on Fanboy Versus before as the writer of the Legion of Monsters miniseries with Elsa Bloodstone. Remember that one? Mm-hmm. But he did honk me off with the end of the first issues. But I wasn't ready to write the book off, so I did then try the second issue. And the second issue is a legitimately good comic. JD, did you go on to read the second
issue? No, I was so hurt and mad and angry at the first issue, I couldn't do it.
Well, the second issue sort of defies... I mean, there's no... I'll tell you who dies in this one because... You already told us?
Yeah.
It's in the preview pages. Red Raven, whoever she is, just tries to flee the island and collides with the force field that's hemming them and breaks her neck and is dead. Within the first two pages.
Wow.
So, you know, she kind of got a black comedy death. So as much as I was still carrying annoyance from the death in the first issue, that sort of broke the tension with the complete blackness of its comedy. And then this, the funny thing is, like, out of the gate, this issue is actually a character piece. It is all from the perspective of the new character, whose name is first given as Riker, and who we learn through the course of the issue is a Deathlok. She is the daughter of the man who created the Deathlok technology, who was fatally injured whenever a Deathlok that her father would create in the future traveled back in time to kill him before he invented it, as you do.
Ah, wow.
And then, you know, we see flashbacks through her eyes of how her body was rebuilt as a cyborg by her father. And she does the Battle Royale Hunger Games bit of wandering through the different climates and zones of the island until she runs into the Braddock Academy kids, and we get to meet them. It really does a great job of introducing us to this brand new character. She presents her as a quite likable, sympathetic little girl who's going to have to learn to understand her powers. Has a really, really savage twist at the very end. Not savage in like a black comedy murderous sort of way, just a really savage, sad little twist. All poor character. I really feel for this kid and I like her and I don't want her to die in the next issue sort of way. So it is actually managing to accomplish that stated goal of hoping to make you care for the new characters before and hope that they don't die. After really rubbing your face in it with the first issue.
Mm-hmm.
So
is it a very graphic book? Is it
it is
violent?
I would say the first one was decently graphic.
Yeah, huh. Yeah. There are bones and boiled flesh. You know, it is pretty graphic. Yeah. So it's a very different kind of book than we have been getting in Marvel's teen book slot over the last couple of years. There's no question that it is going to piss people off and that it has already pissed people off with its attitude to new characters who have potential because, you know, we've said it before on this show and in many other places have said it. New characters are not really being created these days and half of them never get the chance to even take hold with the fandom or the fandom reject them because they are new. And this book seems to go out of its way to want to off them. And that seems like poor planning. But out of the gate, with the second issue, they have managed to create a sympathetic, interesting, nice young girl in Death Lockett, as she is called. Or, you know, Death Lockett, but one character calls her a Death Lockett, but she mishears her and she takes her name to be Death Lockett. Aha, you get it?
I would buy that book in the end.
Really sells you on the character's plight, and it is enough to give me some... It buys the book a reprieve, essentially, after really honking me off with the first issue. The second issue is legitimately a good enough comic to buy the thing a reprieve and make me want to come back and see what happens to this character alone, if nothing else. And that's Avengers Arena. It giveth with one hand, it taketh away with the other, but I'm not ready to write it off yet.
Oh, I was so mad!
I was super mad! I was super pissed! But I I'm not going to throw down a book after one issue when one page out of it pisses me off, you know.
Well, so, I didn't have much interest in reading it like anyway.
Fair enough. A lot of folk didn't.
So that's why I say it's not like I was like gonna read it and then stopped. It was more just like I picked up the first issue just to get an idea of what it was gonna be like, and it's done.
It's not the direction I wanted to see Avengers Academy characters go. Like when we heard Hickman's getting Avengers, I was kind of hoping some of those guys might show up at some point. So that's kind of
well. And he said like I read a lot of like the backup the story like his the letters page, and there's a lot of things in there, and one of the things he's really particular about is there nobody in, nobody out. You know, I mean, that's like this story is nobody gets in, nobody gets out. So you know, it's.
I mean,
it's,
the thing is that we're 16, we're already down to 14. How is this anything more than a maxi series at best?
Well, and he did address that too, in that they didn't want to make it like a mini. I can't remember how he said it. Like they didn't want to make it a mini. Because there's more story there. I mean, first of all, we already know it can't be a death per day, per se, because of the beginning. But, so I think that we may see some times with, you know, some extended time periods.
We make issues where nobody dies.
Right, exactly. But, I mean, but if you think about it.
Like, you know, the whole idea is that these kids are supposed to die. And I mean, that's a terrible idea, frankly. You don't take established characters and put them in. Certainly characters who are brand new and characters who have this much promise and dump them in a scenario like that. The premise is hack work of the worst order that I can't believe Hopeless presented to Marvel and said, here is my idea for the Teen Avengers book. I mean, I have to imagine some corporate smart aleck thought, you know, that Hunger Games is doing quite well. Let's rip that shit off. And then they were like, well, you know, but I still want to believe that it's probably not real. But like outside of the really insufferable premise, he is doing enough good character work. And even in the first issue alone, like the character who dies was being written like really spot on as the one character among all the others who was showing the good common sense and the likable straightforwardness that I really come to like from the character. And again, the idea of Arcade trying to get his cred back because he's become a joke is not a bad one. It's really not. It's just that it means it's a derivative premise. Derivative is going easy on it to come up the premise that. And the fact that it means that it looks like they're killing some popular, you know, cult popular new characters, which is the wrong direction to take with a lot of these characters. But there's enough good stuff going on then in there that I'm not writing the book off yet. Although I do wonder why Reptile was on the cover of this when it's not about him at all.
Well, because that's the cool looking cover.
It is a friggin' cool looking cover. And like, artistically, the book really, it really is a very nice art from Kev Walker on the thing. It is grim and fleshy and bony, but it is nice art, and it's a nice book to look at. And when it's doing the character stuff, it's nice to read. But it does kind of leave you afraid to turn the page.
I don't think I'm going to pick up this book.
Just read the wiki in a year or two.
To turn the page.
I had a feeling.
Really, because I wasn't.
Honestly had a feeling it was going to be Hunger Game-ish. I did.
Oh, yeah.
It is, totally.
You know,
wants you to be afraid for these characters, and I wasn't so. I mean, it's not. I'm angry about who they offed in the first issue, but I can't deny that. It accomplished 100% what it set out to do.
Nobody's safe.
Because now I am afraid.
Gotcha. Gotcha. They made you, it's like, shit, no. Oh, man. Anybody.
I am now afraid for these kids because I have seen somebody literally explode.
Yeah.
That's what happened to this person who died. They were random from Arcade's.
It was totally like, it was totally Dr. Manhattan style.
Pure.
Like if you think about, if you want to talk about like, does it look grim? Like that panel is like any of the panels where Dr. Manhattan is making somebody go explodey. I mean, So.
But So anyway, boil it down. Unpleasant premise that succeeds in what it tries out to do, even if what it succeeds in what it sets out to do, even if what it sets out to do is perhaps not the most lovable thing in the world. But good character writing does genuinely make me afraid for these characters. Good art, not writing it off, but continuing with some trepidation in heart. Not 100% sure if I would recommend it or not. If you're going to have like an emotionally, powerfully negative response to what's happening to these kids, probably don't. It's not going to do it for you. But I think there's enough stuff in there to carry it through for a while at least. We'll see how it goes. I'm gonna stick with it anyway until it pisses me off beyond. Basically, like if Nico from Runaways dies, I'm out.
Really? Mm. That's it?
I think basically, yeah. But
I'm really surprised that they got Runaways characters in there, because I kind of thought they
there's
would
only
be...
two. You know, they were the ones who seemed kind of. They were the ones who seemed like least likely to die, because they have a solid following of their own. Their story is not done. It's like with Avengers Academy, at the end of that series, they didn't finish. Like, it's not like, oh, okay, these characters will now never progress any further than this in their lives. But it does tie off the arcs they've been going through while they've been attending the Academy. They are free to go somewhere different. Unfortunately, in the case of this issue, the place one of them went was the grave, but it's like the Runaways feel like they are much looser and they're much. I will be even more pissed off if Nico from Runaways dies. Mm. So let's
good
just
luck with that.
That doesn't happen. Watch this space, and I'll keep you updated. That's Avengers Arena. So let's move on.
Cool.
So how many is this ongoing or is this a mini?
That's the thing. That's what we were saying. It is listed as an ongoing.
So, yeah.
I don't understand how it
can. But if you think about it, we know that there's at least 29 days that they're going to be on there. He said 30, I think, is supposed to be the total number of days anyway. Hmm. I mean, depending on how he covers it, this is going to be a place out of time in a sense. You could see 2 years, you know, that's 30 issues or so, you know, probably.
Yeah. I mean, I can see a year at least, certainly.
Oh, it'll be way beyond a year. There's enough material for it. I mean, in terms of the way it's being written, to go.
Oh
that
yeah,
way.
If you depending so, on how they break it down. Sure.
Yeah. So, okay, very good. Yeah, I'm thinking about young kids. You know, they watch.
The longer you stretch out a certain period of time, the less believable it becomes. So even if every issue just goes day, bum bum, and then like 3 issues later, it's the next day. The believability, the suspension of disbelief when it comes to the timeline starts to suffer the longer that goes on. I remember the first time that struck me was whenever Kang conquered and devastated the Earth in Kurt Busiek's Avengers, and that went on for a year and a half, and not one other comic reference that happened.
Mm, yeah. So, now, this is supposed to be, though, completely out of space in terms of, like, they're cut off.
Yeah,
so
totally.
This has a little bit more ability to do that, but you know, I think about young kids. They watch Star Wars and they're like, "Man, I want to be a Jedi." And then they read Harry Potter and they're like, "Man, I want to be a wizard." And then they read Hunger Games and they're like, "That was a really interesting book." And
I want to be a trained killer.
Like, well, that was really cool. I don't want to do that at all. all right. Well, that brings us to the end of the show. And we're going to talk about something that we haven't talked about in a little while. We've mentioned again, but Saga.
Yeah, it's back on our radars now after the long break between issues 6 and 7. But this is it.
Wasn't that a long break? I was like, God, when's Saga coming?
I know.
Yeah.
I was afraid it wasn't going to come back. I was just like,
I know.
Oh, yeah. Now, that is another.
This book has been really good about sticking to that monthly schedule, but whenever an Image book slips, even if it's a pre-print slip, start to worry it might not come back.
Now, that's another piece of news maybe that I was thinking of. Like, wasn't there some sort of press release, an apology that they had to issue over the reprint of this? Like, there was...
Oh, yeah, well, that was sort of news, I guess. I mean, they announced there wouldn't be a second printing of... It was either this issue or issue 7.
I think it was 7.
I think that's fair enough, because, I mean, frankly, by it issues, retailers, you really should have the numbers you're ordering of this down. But people still seem to be ordering conservatively on Saga, or not ordering enough, and that has necessitated multiple printings of everything up to the most recent issue. And Image said, you know what, guys? You know, catch up. You know, thumbs up. No reprints of this.
You got trades. You got comics.
Yeah, I mean, there's other means to get in it. But there was
ways to get this comic.
And Image went, sorry, guys. Sorry, actually, we realized you kind of pay our bills. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's what was kind of wacky is, like, they came out and, like, listen, assholes. And then the dude, like, blamed his secretary, which was great. Not his secretary, but it was, like, one of the correspondence people. It reminded me of that scene in Scrooged where he's like, tell him it was probably something she ate. And he said it was probably something she ate. Oh, no. We're very shocked and saddened. Yeah. No one's seen Scrooged.
Okay. I've seen Scrooged.
I love Scrooged.
I love it. That's my second favorite Christmas movie, by the way.
Yeah, it's a great movie. Okay. Takers, who wants to go through this?
Well, shall we go through this, or shall we just do this recommendation?
Do we want to do it recommendation style and just?
We've been having some degree of success.
We're doing well so far, so yeah, okay. What do we want to say then?
Basic content of this issue is it starts with a flashback that shows us how Marco and Alana meant in a way you really didn't.
That was great.
And then it's the continuing adventures of Marco fighting a giant with an inflamed, tumor-covered scrotum with his mother, and Alana dealing with Marco's dad and the secrets he's keeping up on their rocket ship spaceship. And that's about the lot.
Their tree rocket spaceship thing.
Tree rocket ship, yeah.
Dad can make clothes. That's cool.
Yeah.
I love that this continued shitty romance novel kind of plot line thing, you know what I mean? That book that she's been reading. And just reading it and her being like, holy fucking shit. I was like, what?
Well, and then
you get a look at the half page that the book ends on, and it sounds like the worst pile of Mills and Moon trash.
And that's the really freaky part, because it's like, it just sounds like it's totally in line with the way this world has been set up, because it just sounds like two people sitting down to, like, watch a show or something. Yeah. And then you read her description.
Yeah.
What is it? It's like she's trying to push it off onto her friend, and she's like, you've got to read this. This book changed my life. And, like, she explains it, and she says, yeah, I don't really like horror. She's no, it's a love story.
She's like, it's the story of a rock monster and the daughter of the rich quarry owner. What? The monster and the girl meet, but instead of trying to kill each other, mostly hang out and play board games, except sometimes they leave their apartment to eat sandwiches at the movies.
She's like, I don't know, that sounds a little boring.
Like,
what I love in this scene is, like, they are sitting in this... This is like... It is just totally my brain just suddenly died on me. It's the perfect example of the way this world works that Vaughn has set up in Saga, where it's this they're in this sci-fi computer control room where all their view screens are like gelatinous bubbles, and they're sitting on chairs that don't have legs, little floaty chairs. I've literally only just noticed that now as I'm looking at it. Mm-hmm. The chairs are just seats floating, and there's this hideous tentacle brain working levers in like a TARDIS central column of the thing. Yeah. And that there's two women talking about a romance novel, and she's like, talking this book up, how brilliant it is, and then there's like an alarm as a prisoner's making a lot of noise, and she's like, oh, the book's you're gonna love the book, and she runs off gun in hand. and then the tentacle brain turns around and goes, I told you guard duty with her is the fucking worst.
Yeah, and that's what, like, I tried to explain this to my wife, and it's like, it's the most bizarre world you could possibly picture in the most natural setting with, like, the most everyday story. And it's
the tentacle brain is just a bloke.
Yeah, he's just a guy.
Girl ghost is just an ordinary teenager. It's a fantastic world populated by amazingly mundanely ordinary people.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what, maybe that's it. Maybe that's what gets it. I think that's a perfect example where it is. It's really normal people. I mean, like I explained to her, it's like in the first issue, there's a dude with a robot head and his wife with a robot head, and one of the first things you see them doing is fucking.
but he can't get it up. And, you know, they say that's okay, so they just cuddle, and it's like totally weird.
And then, like, another issue later, he's reading a magazine while he's taking a shit. And it's just like...
He's reading this novel, which is why I've been really interested to see what the deal with this novel is.
Yeah. So, awesome. And just strange, bizarre things, but yet...
It's such a great book. I mean, it's I like reading the letters page when right before the break, and the last issue right before the break was they got in their tree rocket ship and they blasted off and the stuff with the parents, that was like the big ender, and in the letters page, I don't know if he was like half joking or if he was serious, but the writer Brian Vaughn, he said, yeah, if the book didn't catch off, we were just gonna have the spaceship just blow up when it was taking off, and that was how it was gonna end.
Oh my god! Like,
can you imagine?
Wow!
And I'm like thinking, there's like basically there's a madman that's like helming this ship, and this can go anywhere. Yeah. It can go all grades of wrong, and I'm like ready for it. Like wherever he goes with this, I'm like following.
I think that's what makes it approachable though and obtainable in the sense that it is so down to earth. Like you could do this without all the crazy science fiction stuff. And it's not that the science fiction stuff makes the story, but yet it sort of
it adds flavor to it.
It adds like a certain flavor.
It's like, here we have Marco and his mother fighting a giant with an inflamed scrotum, but what are they arguing about? It's the mother picking holes in the new girlfriend by bringing up the old girlfriend.
Right.
Yeah.
How does Marco, they don't just have a shouting match, Marco throws lightning bolts at her, because that's the world we live in.
Right. And, the dad is, like, making these mystically imbued clothes, but they're really having a discussion about, like the nature of their relationship and the future and like starting a family and all this. So, it's these very sort of common everyday things. And maybe that's the real trick. Like maybe in a sense, it's like that novel is this book where it's like it's. In reality, this is probably a very mundane story. You could have told it with just people, and it would have been really boring. And yet, it's a rock monster falling in love with the quarry owner, and,
that sounds ridiculous to them.
Right.
But when we try to describe this book to somebody as a love story, they're like, really? Try and tell your mother what this book's about.
Yeah.
try and recommend this love story to your mother.
Yeah.
No, see, it's about this planet and moon that's at war, and one of them is, like, winged techno users, and the other are these horned magic users, and they're on a rocket ship with a half a ghost.
You know what? It's Romeo and Juliet. Yeah. I don't know what to tell you.
Romeo and Juliet in space is how I sell it.
That's exactly what I told my wife. I was like, it's Romeo and Juliet in space with things that are really weird, but that nobody cares about.
Essentially, it's if Romeo and Juliet had made it out of their story alive. It's kind of like Saga kind of picks up where Romeo and Juliet ends if they'd lived.
Yes. I like that. I like that a lot.
It's like, what if Romeo and Juliet actually got to live their lives together?
Kind of feels like Romeo and Juliet with Joss Whedon at the helm is kind of what it feels.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that. I mean, I'd say, it is very fair. It is very balanced, in that sense. It's not, the female is not the damsel in distress in this story at all. So,
no.
But she's not one of those Joss Whedon type butt kicking, dominate, kicks everybody's ass types as well. She's just a character who happens to be in a comic.
Yep. It's great. So yeah, and I will say that the end of this issue is a great. And I'm not going to spoil it, but one of the reasons I wanted to talk about it is because of the end of this issue.
Yeah.
Because, basically everybody in the galaxy has a contract out on this poor couple. And someone with a vested interest shows up.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know what it was going to be when I was going to turn the page, and it was worse than anything I could have imagined.
Oh, I know. If anything I could have thought, it was like, oh, no.
That's not good at all.
Oh.
But it's great because it is just, again, the scene before it is just like, the bounty hunter coordinator who's just Just like the talent agent, the collar ringing talent agent. No, totally big guy. I swear, they love you. No, they didn't know what they were missing. No, you know.
I mean, this could have happened in an office high rise, a corner office, you know, with like the sun setting in the city behind him. But instead, it's happening on a beach with a seahorse guy.
Yeah,
you know.
I think he's so cute. I love the seahorse guy.
But that's what I mean. It's like it's completely strange and unnecessary, but yet you understand the character immediately as soon as they start talking because that part is so relatable. It's one of those things where it's like if you look at it, you're thinking this is really weird, but then you read it and it makes sense. Like you totally, it's a magic trick.
The world is just made to make sense by the fact that everybody lives in it, regardless of what color, shape, or the number of things sticking out of their face.
Right.
They're all just real people. They're real, they're real characters that you've seen in fiction so many times over, or in real life, you know. But it's all immensely, immediately relatable, you know, and it sells the fantastic world on you. But it's not as if you're not picking up the book to see what crazy scenario is going to turn up next, you know. I mean, while Marco and his mum fight this giant, they find out that the planet they're on is an egg that's about to hatch. What's going to happen there? I don't know.
Yeah, it's bad, but you know.
But he makes clothes on a spinning wheel. You know, it's like the ship had the spinning wheel. Thankfully, your ship had a decent spinning wheel. That's what that is. That was a coffee press.
Prayed it was a coffee press.
And she thinks he's a seamstress, and he says, "Most certainly not. I'm an armorer. These garments are for your own protection. Everything I conjured for you is rayproof and gunpowder resistant, but they're not much use against bladed weapons, so try not to get stabbed."
And of course they look good on her mushy parts. So
yeah, that's and good. Crazy flattering mushy parts. Yeah. My
the
God.
Thing is, for a woman that just had a baby, I understand what she's talking about. I haven't had a kid, right? But, you know, when women have kids, her body tends to go soft, so I can understand that part.
Looking awesome. Pretty good. And, you know, that's something else as well. Holy crap, the art, seriously.
Oh, man, it's great.
And we get that's something that's on the letters page this issue as well. We get the little breakdown of her process. And you see, like, short of the lettering, she does everything in this book. And I think I knew that already, but it's just great to see it actually happen. Mm-hmm. Like, she inks directly over onto her thumbnails. She does the background, she does the flat. She handwrites in Hazel's narrative dialogue. The only thing she doesn't do is the actual speech bubbles.
Wow.
And, like, it just shows, you know?
Yeah.
It is, like, she has made this book her own.
There's a lot of love and care that you can tell.
Yeah.
It's just beautiful.
It is a great book. If you're missing out on it, oh man, you really have got to read this book.
We do the best of 2012. Don't be surprised. Okay,
yeah,
kids?
I mean, you're going to hear this name probably a few times in a couple of different categories, maybe. Because yeah, it is absolutely great. So very good. So, well, there you go. There's a show. Hey. And a reasonably length show at that. So, so I won't hang out too long. I will say, as Chris just mentioned, next week is our best of 2012. We will definitely be doing Spider-Man 700 as basically our, you know, end of show recommendation. We'll be talking about it in all its spoilery wonder.
Should it be in the show, or should it be like you get it out of the way first and then the rest of the show talk about...
We'll decide. We'll decide. Yeah, we'll figure that out.
You'll get the best of both worlds.
This is Fanboy Versus. We kind of fly by the seat.
I mean, really, the only reason we're reviewing anything at all next week instead of just doing the best of 2012 is because we can't let this issue go past.
No. Yeah. So,
I mean, it might be considered for, like, best issue.
Possibly.
Best something. You never know, you know?
But we'll have our best of. So if you want to email, tweet us anything, your recommendations, maybe something we missed.
Best mini or one shot, best artist, best writer. Sorry, best new series, best ongoing series, best mini or one shot, best artist, best writer, best single issue.
Right. So, and we're all going to have picks for those as well. So You know, so make sure you, like I said, send it in. One of us may pick it up, you know, think about it. You know, like I said, it's impossible. Our brains are not huge enough to hold a year's worth of comics in our head. There's bound to be something that we've missed or not thought about that should be in consideration.
I know, so, I've been going through over mine. I'm like, I forgot I read this. Yeah.
It's really hard this year, too, because like, I've been thinking about it. I've been trying to think, okay, a year's worth of comics, what was the best stuff that I read? And I was like, God, there's a lot of good stuff that I read this year.
Yeah, tons of good stuff.
I will try. So. I'll try to keep my turtles down to a minimum.
Okay. We'll hold our breath. So there you go. So be sure to check us out. Like I said, if you want to send us a message, go to the website, fanboyversus.com or tfradio.net. The email is there and linkable, so that's easy to do. You can also tweet us at fanboyvs or any of our individual Twitters as well, since we usually, you know, share that stuff around. If you're inclined to do so, you can join us live next week if you have not done so before. This show records at 4 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. GMT.
That's right.
And so you can join us live at tfradio.net/live. So we'll have all the picks and everything there. We'll hopefully do some chat monitoring. I am not very good at it. So I need to make Nicole do it or something, because I suck at monitoring the chat.
I'll do it next week. Yeah.
I'll put
my secretary skills to work.
There you go. You got it. So that we'll get some feedback and stuff as well as we go through, because maybe you disagree with our picks. That'd be interesting. So. So anything else before we head out? Nothing.
We're good. I think just to wish everybody a Merry Christmas.
So Merry Christmas. Yes. Merry Christmas. That'll be happening.
Happy holidays if you do.
Happy holidays.
Yeah, sorry.
Joyous Kwanzaa, hot guy.
How about UK? Doesn't do that. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to all the Americans.
So, and everything else that could be. So, Merry Christmas, everybody. All right. That is our show. Thank you so much for tuning in. And please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus.
This has been Fanboy Versus. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.